हरे कृष्ण। हेलो,
जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, शोदानंदन प्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन प्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे, हरे हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम राम हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम राम हरे हरे, राधा वृंदावन चंद्र की, श्री श्री गौर निताई की। श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा महारानी की, श्रीनिवास बालाजी की, श्रील प्रभुपाद की, समावेत भक्त वृंद की, निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे। ओम अज्ञानत निरंधस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुः उन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरोः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सह गणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्विकांश्च। नमाओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे, निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे। नमो महावदन्याय कृष्णप्रेमप्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्यनाम्ने गौरत्विषे नमः। हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशगोपिकाकान्तराधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते। तप्तकाञ्चनगौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरि वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च, पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवत्युत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। हरे कृष्ण। Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.19 तदा रजस्तमो भावाः कामलोबादयश्च ये चेत एतैरनाविद्धं स्थितं सत्वे प्रसीदति। As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of the natures, moods of passion and ignorance such as lust, desire and hankering disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy.
एवं प्रसन्न मनसो भगवत भक्ति योगतः भगवत तत्व विज्ञानम् मुक्त संगस्य जायते. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. So it's a very long purport it is. So we were doing last Sunday on removing unwanted habits. So revision of part 1, I am just showing 2-3 slides. And then we are proceeding to the part 2 today. You see, there are two phases. One is going through anartha nivritti up to the stage of nishtha, which means shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti and nishtha. Up to that, there was one seminar called Shaky to Steady. We did that. 5 parts we did. Now, the second part of anartha nivritti is beyond nishtha, which is from nishtha up to the stage of prema also. The stage between nishtha and prema. So, we are doing both today. We have done this last time. Last time, one more thing was to be added. Now, I added now. You see the green one? I added there. Maya mugdasya jivasya gneyo anarthas chaturvidaha. It says, no? Hriddaurbalyam cha aparado asatrishna tatva vibramaha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur categorized all the anarthas in 4 parts. He said, weakness of heart, like metal attachment, envy, fault finding, and all that in Hridaya Durbalyam. And in Asatrishna, he included things like attachment for earthly and heavenly pleasures, attachment for control, controllership mentality in the form of siddhis, attachment for moksha. So Asatrishna means actually chase after pleasures. And Tattva Vibrama means Svatattva Vibrama, Paratattva Vibrama, Sadhana Sadhya Vibrama, which means not a clear understanding of the soul and position of God and position of the sadhana, what is the right sadhana to be done, and also not having sufficient information about the other dangerous philosophies like Mayavad and Buddhism and getting misled by them. So, Tattva Vibrama is illusion about the philosophy or the truth. And the second one is aparadhas, which we have been discussing about. So, these 4, when they are present in a conditioned soul, that leads to the 5 obstacles. Laya, Vikshepa, Pratipati, Kashaya and Rasaswada. So, because these 4 are not cleared, those 5 obstacles are posed while growing in devotional service. Sleep, distraction, disinterest, and lust, anger, greed surfacing, and impure vibrations from previous sins. And then when these obstacles come, they pose a serious, they pose 2 problems. One is in Rajaguna, one is in Tamaguna. In Rajaguna, they pose the problem of Vikshepa and Audasinya. And Tamaguna, they pose the problem of Jadya. Those 3 kinds of inattentiveness. And if we allow these 3 kinds of inattentiveness to persist, then they give rise to those 10-12 weeds, which Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said. One develops. Actually, when you say bhukti, there are multiple branches of bhukti. One may want to become a professional reciter of Bhagavatam, one may want to make money, One may want to do business in the dham from the thousands of devotees coming there. One may become attracted to the opposite sex and chase after someone for illicit relation. All this comes in bhakti. Similarly, when you take siddhi, then one wants to control other living entities. Then one wants to start one's own organization. One becomes whimsical. One becomes independent-minded. One becomes a great deviant. And all those things come in wanting control like that. Similarly, mukti. So in this way, you will find there are 10, 12 things he gave. In summary, we call it as a formidable list of anarthas. So those anarthas, when they come, well, that time it is too late to rectify them. Therefore, here the stage one, the green one is the stage one, isn't it? Then the black one, the brown one I have shown you. So we can try from the stage one itself, before it goes to stage 2, 3, 4, like that. It gets very dangerous as we go ahead accumulating them. So in Shaky to Steady seminar, which we did before, 5 parts. So there we discussed about all these things, and the solution to all these things is offenseless chanting. But offenseless chanting is not directly possible because we have so many anarthas. So one can also try to work on avoiding these anarthas also. For that one has to get educated about what is Hriday Durbalyam, what is Aparadha, Asatrishna, Tattva Vibhrama, and how to avoid sleep and how to avoid distraction. So we can avoid each of these items. When I saw this list, although it is very frightening on one hand, on the other hand, it is a great wealth of wisdom we have. At least we know we are not in a guerrilla warfare. We are aware of, what are the obstacles in our spiritual life. In just one snapshot, you get everything. And also, some of the solutions were given. Last time we discussed about them. Chant daily and for prolonged periods. In the company of advanced devotees who have raga for the Lord, anuraga. Study the behavior of offenseless chanters. How they speak, how they walk, how they do their things. How they are blissfully situated in their own Krishna consciousness without offending others, and emulate their mood, he's saying. And then we can also inquire from them how to overcome inattentiveness. Their personal example as well as their instructions and guidance they will give us will be very helpful. These are all things we can do in our life. Apart from that, we can go to the deities and beg for the mercy of the holy name. We can also meet the owner of the holy name, who is Krishna, and beg his mercy to be able to chant well. Also, we can sit before Tulsi Devi and pray for her mercy while chanting. Haridas Thakur told that prostitute to chant in front of Tulsi, correct, na? Yeah. Then, some more practical tips are given. Devotees must listen to well-wishers who can pinpoint specific unwanted habits or weeds and distinguish them from real reapers of devotion, which means if we become arrogant and ego-driven, we may not be willing to listen to anybody. We may think, I know everything. This is called as I know everything syndrome. At a certain stage, one may come to that. And also, one may artificially imagine oneself to be very mature and very advanced, and one doesn't need any advice from others, and I am smart. And other fellow, this fellow has this problem, that fellow has that problem. Nobody in this world is fit to guide me. So, and I follow only my spiritual master, whom I never meet. So therefore I have, instead of G-U-R-U, four-letter guru, I have another four-letter guru. Who is the guru? Mind, my own mind. So, such people are likely to become solid victims of all these anarthas, because they are nowhere and they will get lost. Many have tried to imitate Haridas Thakur by becoming Nirjan Bhajan Babaji's. All kinds of things they have done. All the drama is over in the last 4 or 5 decades. It's gone as seen. So, therefore, we should honestly have somebody in whom we have trust to take help and to pinpoint specific unwanted habits. And also, as neophyte practitioners, we should take necessary steps to cut down unwanted creepers. First of all, you have to detect the creeper and then cut down the creeper. If somebody cannot detect the creeper only, then where is the question of cutting down? He will keep watering it. It will keep growing. The purpose of these seminars is, we are taking help from Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani Maharaja's very beautifully written book for sadhakas, and we are trying to understand what are the weeds and how do we detect them in our system and how do we cut the weeds and curtail any whimsical behavior that may arise from the neglect of essential spiritual practices. Like the other regular things are also said: early rising, attending morning program, maintaining strict Vaishnava conduct, avoiding mundane movies, mundane food cooked by non-devotees, all these things. So there are a lot of these two slides have plenty of things which it is giving as clue for. One is this: how can devotees stop chanting inattentively? And practical tips to eradicate the weeds. So one can try to implement these things in one's life and gradually rise above the anarthas and come to sattvaguna. Get rid of the tada rajastamo bhava kama lobha adyasche. And then lastly, this is the one we discussed last time: training to provide immunity from maya by training our devotees from Prabhupada's books and tapes, which Prabhupada himself said in that letter called Boiling the Milk Letter. Correct, no? We had a talk regarding that. Now we go to part 2 today. Removing unwanted habits. But part 2 is Nishtha to Prem. Now we have not even reached Nishtha, then why do we want to learn about Nishtha to Prem? You may have a question, isn't it? Already we are struggling with so many things to solve prior to Nishtha. Is it really necessary? Actually, the reason we are doing it today, Nishtha to Prem, in that stage, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava and Prema. So, Jaya Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra ki Jaya. So, the reason I am doing this part here, I felt that it is good to know in advance what obstacles are remaining after Nishtha and what damage we can cause ourselves right now, because of which we may not be able to go beyond Nishtha only properly. Therefore, if you know now, there are many warnings he is giving by taking care of which, you know, it's like, you know, the milestones, what are going to come and what obstacles will come and what advantages are also there. Some part of it is very encouraging also to hear. And you go, so I felt that it is very good to know, just like people ask you when you are in 8th standard, you know, what do you want to become, engineer or doctor? And we don't know what is engineering, what is medicine. Correct, no? We don't know. So people, the children generally say that, I don't know. But as you proceed towards 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, it is good for you to get to know about both, your interest. Because when you go to 12th, you will have to choose and enter into one of the fields, isn't it? In the same manner, if we are already in Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, we have come to the stage of initiation, we have come to the stage of chanting 16 rounds and becoming, endeavoring for stability, we are coming close to Nishtha. It is better for us to know what awaits us in the further stages also. And you will find it very useful. Read it. Mansnapu, give the mic to him.
With increasing spiritual strength, sadhaka quickly move from one stage to higher stage.
Yeah, this is a very fast thing, he says. If spiritual strength is increased, then the progress becomes very speeded up. But if the spiritual strength is weak, then we are like working on obstacles. We are struggling. Sometimes the vehicles you have seen, some vehicles cannot pick up speed beyond a certain speed. Either it's a old vehicle or a vehicle to be repaired or something like that. But he says if the engine is good, then our engine is our heart. If the heart is infested with anarthas, then there is a spiritual weakness, like Hriday Daurbalyam, as we say. Then the progress is, you know, slowed down. But he says that if you follow all that which was said before, the revision we said, if all those things are followed and one is now becoming healthy, we have experienced ourselves when we get viral fever or something, and on the during the day of the viral fever, our tongue is bitter, body is burning, you know, every point in the body is pricking, and you feel very uneasy. When you lie down, you feel like getting up and sitting down, walking, and you can't eat food properly. You take only soups and everything. Correct, no? But when you take some antibiotics or something, in 2, 3, 4 days, you can see yourself gradually coming out from the unhealthy state. Yeah? So, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, as we proceed from Bhajana Kriya, Anartana Vritti, Nishta, gradually we should start perceiving healthy symptoms. Now we will come to know what are those healthy symptoms. So when those healthy symptoms come, then our strength can be increased. Like when you are sick, you can't eat nourishing foods and increase your strength, because the nourishing foods will not digest. But once the health has started resuming, then you can take in and gain the strength. So now let us see what he says. Read further, Prabhu.
Unsteady devotional service removes most impurities from the heart. Service and steadiness, taste and attachment remove almost all
taste
that.
Taste means ruchi. Service and nishta, ruchi and asakti. Those three, they remove?
Almost all that remain.
Almost?
All that remain.
All that remain, yeah.
A few particularly serious habits, however, go away only at the stage of ecstasy, and the most pernicious only at the stage of love.
Okay. So that means in three parts he is saying. The first part is up to the stage of nishta. And the second part of anarthas go away from nishta, ruchi and asakti. That goes in. And then the third part of anarthas go away. Bhava and Prema. And that everybody knows, those are the offenses. The last part, the offenses only go away when we have Bhagavad Darshanam. See the Lord eye to eye. So, in the first two parts, up to the stage of, actually there is a table where it is shown, I can find out, if before ending if possible, I'll try to show it, which says that the Bhaktiyuta, that goes away by the time you come to nishta. Like even this sukrutota, dushkrutota, bhaktiyuta, all these things, either they go in nishta or they go in asakti stage. Or ruchi stage. So by them, because bhaktiyuta means the tarangarangini and all. They go away very easily before asakti itself. Because a devotee becomes intelligent and awakened, he gets to see that, oh, this material, inclinations have cheated me. Now I don't want to get cheated anymore. I cannot trade Krishna with these things. So he is able to see by the time he goes to the asakti stage. Similarly, the sukrutota, dushkrutota and all are nullified, because you know that famous verse, aprarabdham phalam papam kutam bijam phalonmukam krameneva praliyeta vishnu bhakti ratatmanam. That verse says, the aprarabdha phalam, and then and prarabdha, aprarabdha, bija, kuta, and then avidya. So in that order, gradually it keeps getting nullified as we progress in these stages. So as we keep on progressing in these stages, even avidya also goes away at the stage of asakti, I think. Up to avidya, everything is finished. Ignorance. If avidya root only is finished, then there are no more problems after that. Like for example, avidya is the darkness, because of which we are in ignorance about what is soul, what is God, what is relationship. If avidya only is removed, it's like switching on a tube light in a dark room. Once the light is on, you see everything as they are. Then if avidya is gone, then there is no, you don't commit sin. When you don't commit sin, there is no suffering. So kuta, bija, papa karma phala, everything is finished by the stage you come to asakti itself. And then those sins cannot repeat after that. They cannot revisit. One has no more inclination. Like any of you fear that you may suddenly end up eating meat or something, you will not eat, because those desires have vanished from your head now. There is no question of turning back. But there are some sins which you are likely to fall down to. So we may fall. But there are other sins which, for which your inclination itself is gone. Like that, when you come to asakti, the avidya is cleared. You see things as they are. So you will see that at that time one cannot commit those sins again. It would just be not of any consequence at all. Even if facilities available to commit sin, one will not. So therefore, he is saying that in three parts the anarthas go away gradually. So there are gross anarthas which go away in the beginning and little more subtle, and then the finest of the anarthas. In this way they gradually go. Yeah. Just like when you wash a pot also, when you big patela from the kitchen, when you throw water and wash it, when you do like this, it looks washed, but then there are many things sticking to it. Correct, no? Then there is one metallic thing, you know that? One metallic thing they have. Scrubber. With that you put and you remove it. Then only it will go. Otherwise, it will not go. Like that, there are finer anarthas, like aparadhas, which go at a later stage. Go ahead, Prabhu.
As devotees advance in Krishna consciousness, their spiritual strength increases. Consequently, the rate at which they give up unwanted habits and the rate at which they advance accelerate.
Yeah, like you have seen a small child. Initially, the child is only lying down. Then the child gradually learns to turn around. Uthan, they call it. Like Krishna also turns around. And after that, tries to swim on the floor. From one place to another. Then he slowly tries to catch the wall and get up. And then he tries to walk and then he falls. So that is the time parents, you know, show the hand and say, hey, come here, come here. And he tries to go like this and then he falls on the ground. Sometimes they give the hand. Toddler we call, isn't it? And then sometimes the child is able to walk with catching the hand of the parents. And then a stage comes when the child can properly walk. So sadhana bhakti is compared to the child's walking. Prabhupada says the walking ability is innate in the child. But it appears difficult in the beginning for the child. But once you actually get up and start walking, after a few years, walking becomes so natural for you. You don't need to, you know, be escorted for walking or something. So that's why he is saying that that innate ability to walk means, that is awakened means, it's like strength is again regained. So he is saying, as we advance in Krishna consciousness, the spiritual strength increases. And then therefore the unwanted habits, the rate at which they give up goes very, is accelerated. Go ahead.
Thus, they begin to move more quickly from one stage to another. When they begin to perceive the blossoming of their devotional creeper, they dance in ecstatic bliss.
Yeah. So this is a very encouraging statement. Because as we swiftly progress, but of course for that our spiritual strength has to be increased. Like doctor gives us two things, patya and also medicine, correct? No? So like if you say that if you take the medicine and follow the patya, then you very quickly become, you know, healthier. But oftentimes people keep the medicine in the cupboard and they forget to take it. And the patya they fail to follow because of the old habits of eating. Like doctor says, don't eat any oily items. Don't eat pakoda, don't eat bhaji, samosa. But that is the thing, very attractive. As soon as they smell it, they say, I will not take too much, I'll take little. So we don't follow the patya and we forget to take the medicine. Then our sickness continues. But if somebody is faithfully following, because Guru gives both. Guru gives the holy name and he gives the four regs, he gives. And by following it, and also many other things we said now, in the previous slides. By following all these things very faithfully and sincerely. So the sincerity of the individual counts a lot. See, the sincerity should manifest as commitment to the vows. And commitment to the vows comes from respect and affection for the spiritual master. So if somebody out of intense affection for him feels that, oh, whatever he says, I will do. So there are people who have taken initiation with that affection and they have followed him. And there are some who have a great respect for his spiritual stature, for his greatness, for his realizations, for his exaltedness. So then they have also taken to the commitments and very faithfully followed. But if somebody takes the initiation very cheaply or the guru's instructions cheaply, then they don't get opportunity to follow the vows very strictly. And then they tend to be slack in them. And the slackness is like keeping the medicine in the cupboard and not following patya. Then the sickness doesn't go away. But those who follow the path, they get spiritual strength. Then if you are gaining spiritual strength, you become healthier. Go ahead.
Most unwanted habits caused by previous sinful and pious activities are quickly eradicated even by unsteady practice.
Unsteady practice means prior to nishtha. Prior to nishtha, sukrutota and dushkrutota are finished before nishtha, he says. So what is dushkrutota? Dushkriti activities means sinful activities. Yeah? Like what we have been doing in the past lives and the current life, breaking the four regulative principles and such kinds of things. When you come to nishtha, those habits will be gone completely. Like for example, somebody says, "Oh, Prabhuji, I slipped due to this bad habit, I did this, I did that." All these things will be gone by nishtha stage, and the sinful reactions that arise from that, which is chasing us, that will be nullified when you come to. So that is dushkrutota. And sukrutota is the pious deeds that we did, that also chases us. It will take us to the, it will bring the results. There is a mention about Bharat Maharaj and others, that they became royal kings and they had abundant facilities and comforts and luxuries because of the previous pious activity, and the king just used it all in Krishna's service, it is said. The Puranas tell many stories how you cannot escape even the punya also. Papa and punya both chase after you. Once upon a time, a man got frustrated with life and wanted to commit suicide. So he went to the top of a hill and he decided to hurl off the rock. So he jumped off from the rock and there was a river flowing below. So he came and fell in the river, and there was a Rajkumari taking bath along with her friends. So when he fell like that in the water, at that time a big crocodile had come opening the mouth to catch that Rajkumari. And all her friends swam to the bank screaming. So she was the last one to come, and the crocodile was very close to her. But when this fellow jumped like this, the crocodile became afraid. Somebody is coming to kill me. He went underwater. When he went underwater, all her friends became so happy. Our princess is saved. So they immediately, took the princess along with this gentleman also. He is the hero who came from the top and saved our princess. King said, "You see, my dear gentleman, I have no son. I have only one daughter. Now that you have saved my daughter, you marry her and you be the king." So the king handed over the kingdom and went for retirement. So this fellow was surprised. "I was thinking of committing suicide. Now this is another problem I got into now. How did I get this kingdom and so much wealth and the princess?" Because that was pending in his account. Punya pending. So many of you will observe your fame that you get, the wealth that you get, it's not that you worked very hard. Like somebody is born in a Hinduja's family, some 40-45,000 crores or something like that, Reliance family, 20,000 crores, so people like this. A child is born, as soon as he opens the eyes, he finds my papa has got so many thousands of crores. So what did he do? He simply punya, that's all. Some punya he did, he was born there in that family. So that is sukrutota. Why that is also considered a kind of anartha? Because whether it is punya or pap, it actually pins you down on the material world and makes you spend time in reaping the fruits. Correct, no? So, or you have to go to heaven and come. So much time gets lost. So, therefore, sukrutota, dushkrutota, everything is finished by asakti. It's all wiped out. He is saying, go ahead. By
the time devotees reach the stage of steadiness, these unwanted habits are fully eradicated, with only a slight chance that they will recur. When devotees reach the stage of attachment, asakti, there is no chance that they will again commit the same sins. In this way,
asakti comes after ruchi also. Nishtha, ruchi, and then asakti. Yeah. In the stage of ruchi, it is said the taste has been awakened for the devotional service. And sometimes the mind may run to sense gratification, occasionally, for even a devotee having ruchi. But a devotee who has come to asakti stage, absolutely there is no possibility of mind running to sense gratification. On the contrary, the mind at the least expected moment runs to Krishna, thoughts of Krishna in asakti stage. That means asakti is just one stage prior to bhava. So it's a very advanced stage, and one gets even glimpses of Krishna's darshan even in asakti stage. So therefore, And once it reaches the asakti stage, one cannot commit any more sins. Yeah, in this way?
In this way, all anarthas arising from past sinful and pious acts are absolutely nullified at asakti.
Yeah, correct. So in this way, by increasing spiritual strength, the sadhaka moves very fast. Yeah, yes?
Second, pious acts have same effect as sinful work and leads to the growth of the anarthas that bind conditioned souls.
Really? One may wonder, pious, I thought pious is a good thing and sin is a bad thing. You know, one may think like that. But why he says so, he is explaining, yeah.
Mundane moralists and religionists argue in favor of performing pious acts, building hospitals, feeding the poor and schooling the illiterate, and speak of such virtuous work as if it were the ultimate goal of life. They go so far as to say that service to man is service to God.
Yeah, manav seva hi madhav seva hai. You see, even in starting a school, if somebody is starting a school, for example, you say that our school stands for, like for example, many of the people in certain missions, when they have the school, they have a very strong connection to the mission. Like for example, there is one organization who puts, they have two prominent leaders, one guru and one disciple. They put their photo, very big, everywhere in the school you will find their photo. And so the photo of the Paramahamsa along with the disciple, the photos are everywhere. So the photos are everywhere, and when the children join the school, the first month itself they are given a bulk of books, 5-6 books. Every year they are given some books in those schools. And for the books, who pays the charge? Students only pay. When they pay the school fee, several thousands of rupees, the charge for these books is also included. So we have to ask ourselves, when we start a school, do we give our founder Acharya's books to the children? Do we put his pictures everywhere prominently? And they also keep talking, teachers keep talking about dedicating life to the mission of their founder. So many of the children have studied from 1st standard to 10th, 12th standard. By the time they come to 12th, they give up everything and join the mission. Or they go to college and then they come back and join mission, and how loyal they are to their teachers. Many children say, oh, Swamiji used to come and teach, and many Swamis in Saffron go and teach in the classes. They teach not only moral science, they tell many stories about the Acharya, and they tell many, so they actually teach the children that your schooling is mainly for doing some great work for our mission. But we have seen there are other schools, we have seen, which may be like mission schools, where material achievements, you have to get good marks, you have to be big in sports, and you have to crack the state rank, you have to get into IIT or NIT, you have to go abroad, you think about yourself, your career, I, me, mine. If that type of thing is floated in any school, it may be naam ke vaste in the name of the founder. His name may be there. And if you say that if any of the brahmachari sannyasis go to give classes, many parents sometimes may not like it. In some, they may say that, oh, children will become brahmacharis or sannyasis. They may have fear. Then there is no freedom for the children and not for the teachers. And also, if saintly people are not regularly met by the children, then the children won't get the spiritual touch. Then they get a lot of material touch. Correct, no? So then there is one school in Pune called Gurukul. So as soon as you hear the name, you get an ethos of a Vedic Gurukul. But it's a pakka international school. But one good thing they did was, they called Ashray Govind Prabhu and involved in teaching. They said, we have the name Gurukul, but actually we want to make it a Gurukul. We want our children to learn. All over the world, children come there. So they go to teach once a week. So the point is, our schools actually have to carry a Vedic ethos. Like in our BMS school also, they celebrate many of the Indian festivals. They also introduce, like you can see the BMS anniversary, they put Prabhupada once. So it's very important that the spiritual ethos is kept in the school, without which the school will become a school without soul. It's like a body without soul. And it is useless. Body without soul is useless. It will become like that. Therefore, many Christians also started in India, schools and hospitals, and they Like even we have studied in a convent also in our school days. So there will be prayer in the morning and everything. And we are given free Bible for everybody. And the goal is what? People read the Bible, hear the stories of Jesus and develop attraction. Many of us in our school days developed a very strong attraction for Jesus. But over a period of time, of course, we studied Bhagavad Gita and then other literatures and everything. But the point is, if the teachers are very loving, caring, very intelligent, and they are also handing over the religious principles to be followed in life, and they themselves are very sacrificing. Like if the same teacher, if the teacher goes out to work, the teacher will be getting say 45,000. And the same teacher works in a mission school, he is only getting 15,000. And the teacher says, yes, I will work here only. I am ready to accept just 15,000. Because money is not the criteria. I want to offer my body and mind for my founder Acharya, Prabhupada's mission. That is a school, real school. Same with Bhaktivedanta Hospital, also His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was telling that actually the doctors who work there, one of their first goals should be that I am a devotee and this hospital is actually meant for propagating devotional service. And even if the salary you get is less there, say only one third you are getting what you will get outside. So you don't mind working there because your mission is being fulfilled. So that therefore, very simple, like right now we are brahmacharis in ISKCON. So if you say we are brahmacharis, wearing this dress doesn't make us brahmacharis. We have to check, do we have a selfless spirit, sacrificing spirit? Are we here to fulfill the desires of the founder Acharya? Are we giving our sweat and toil for it? Then it becomes, then the organization becomes spiritualized by it. Otherwise the organization becomes a mundane welfare activity. So he's telling about the school. There are people even in ISKCON who make pamphlets where they say, oh, the children who are illiterates are suffering, so we want to have educate them. How? Teach them maths, physics, science, chemistry, biology. So that we want to educate the children and empower them so that they can become leaders of society. And there is no one word about Krishna. There is no one word about going back to Godhead. There is no one word about chanting Hare Krishna. One picture of Krishna you don't see. So making a literate child into a literate child is a thoroughly mundane activity. It has nothing to give and take with spirituality. If that is what is the goal of our school, we are cheating the masses as spiritualists. Actually, it is better to cheat the masses by being a materialist. Why do we want to be a spiritualist and cheat the masses? So therefore, we have to check, what do you have in your school? What spiritual items are you teaching? How have you spiritualized your school? In the same manner, our building hospital, feeding the poor, schooling illiterate, these are all considered mundane. They can be spiritualized by the person at the top. The person at the top, how is he handing down spiritual things to the people, and they also should listen to him. So that then the children or the people coming to hospital, they get, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj also told about Bhaktivedanta Hospital. If this hospital is not preaching Krishna consciousness and it is not reaching that to people, then it's better to close it. There is no use having a school or a hospital or a food feeding program which does not propagate the goal of ISKCON. It does not propagate the goal, purpose of ISKCON. Like for example, feeding the poor means there should be chanting of the holy name. There should be kirtan should be accompanying the distribution of the food. Otherwise, His Holiness Jayato Swami called it food for death, he called it. What is food for life, food for death? Food for life means when the prasadam is being distributed, the distributor wears tilak, kantimala, and is making everybody say Hare Krishna and gives them. And in the background there is kirtan going on. That is called food for life. And you go to some place and some karmis in pant shirt or the school people only distribute the food to the people without any spiritual content. Children don't even know where is it coming from. There is no spiritual death. It becomes food for death, like that he was telling. Yeah, go ahead. So sometimes you will find devotees also, their lower nature comes out. What is the lower nature? Prabhuji, we are giving Bhagavad Gita class, nobody is giving, nobody is giving money for running the temple. If you easily go in that line, there is a CSR facility, so we can, we can very easily make money because people give money for social service activities. I can show you a dialogue of Prabhupada. Prabhupada says that, do you think I am not intelligent enough to use the social welfare activities as a tool to attract people to ISKCON. I know many organizations are doing that. But we want to prove to the world, Prabhupada says, we will give spiritual stuff, the spiritual substance we will give, and still people are coming. That is the strength of ISKCON. Prabhupada says that in one of the dialogues. Because most organizations failed in this. When you give mainly spirituality, people don't come. But Prabhupada wanted to show that even though we are giving only spiritual substance, making it irresistibly attractive, we are able to attract people. Not that you have to take Sahara, take the support of the social welfare activities, then only people will come. And then you very proudly say that, you know, we are delivering so many patients, you know, we have educated 1,000 children in mundane education, which Prabhupada called a slaughterhouse. So these kind of things, you are taking support. That means you are a weak organization. You are not a strong organization. Strong organization means the saintly people are so pure and strong, and they attract people only for the spiritual cause. Go ahead.
Surely people's essential needs must be met. But to confuse mundane welfare work with the goal of life is a misunderstanding. Pious, attached work leads to the growth of the anarthas that bind conditioned souls to matter. In that sense, they have the same effect as sinful work.
In that sense, he's saying. Because sinful work binds the soul. Similarly, the pious work also
binds
the soul. So you get pious results, but where you get? In the material world only. So then you have to be born again to reap the good fruits for that. Go ahead.
The only difference is that the ropes that bind the conditioned souls have different natures.
You have a gold rope or iron rope.
That is, pious acts creates temporary happiness, while sinful acts create temporary misery.
Actually, we have to do that work which will not bind us. Yajñārthāt karmaṇah anyatra lokoyam karma bandhanah tadartham karma gaunteya mukta saṅghas samāchara. So Prabhupada says, a very rich man can build a very big temple, and he is also allowed to live there in case he has sold out his property, everything. That is what one devotee did. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur had one disciple. He sold all his property. He didn't have a single penny. Everything, he exhausted his treasury and made a very big Bagh Bazaar temple. And he told the Guru, "Guru, in my life, whatever I had, manasa deha gaha yoga kichu more, arpilatu vapade, I just want to give it all to Krishna service." He gave. There are some disciples like that. Prabhupada says, if a disciple has done that, then he can also be allowed to live in the temple. We will give him a room. He can also take prasadam till his last breath, along with his family. There are people who have given like that completely. If you see Jain people, they build a lot of temples everywhere. They give sometimes 75% of their earning. They give. There are people like that who give. So they sanctify all their money by giving it all to Guru, and they keep very little for themselves. So therefore he is saying here that the pious activities which we do, they are binding. But if it is given for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, they are liberating, and they burn away all the karma bandhana completely. Yajñārthāt karmaṇah anyatra, he says. Yajñārthāt karmaṇah. You should work only for the pleasure of Krishna. Like Prabhupada says in one place, the brahmacharis are preaching. But those people who are assisting brahmacharis to preach by giving funds, by giving car, by giving a bungalow support, they get the same benefit what the brahmachari also gets. Prabhupada writes, because they are supporting with a great heart, that, you know, they feel that, oh, let this devotee get support for preaching. Poor fellow, he has no money, he is struggling hard, let me help him print the books, let me help him have accommodation for preaching, let us give them a hall, let us give some vehicle. With that sympathetic mindset, those who are giving, they are also taking part in preaching, Prabhupada says. So that way, everybody should be trained to offer their wealth, offer their facilities in propagating Krishna consciousness. 12.10 Bhagavad Gita. That is the right way of spending energy and money and time, everything. And one should not foolishly get diverted by pious activities, thinking that, because there is a sympathy in our heart for the masses. So, just like Bharat Maharaj showed sympathy to the deer without Krishna. Without Krishna element, he was showing sympathy. On the other hand, Shivananda Sen showed sympathy to the dog with Krishna element. his sympathy, Ranti Dev. So Ranti Dev and Shivananda Sen are in the same boat. They both showed sympathy to the conditioned souls with Krishna consciousness. And Bharat Maharaj showed sympathy without Krishna consciousness. So we have to clearly know the difference. Yeah. Yes? Therefore, Kaviraj Goswami considers the distinction. He says, Dvaite Bhadra Bhadra Jnana Sava Mano Dharma.
Dvaite Bhadra Bhadra Jnana Sava Mano Dharma.
Yai Bhala Yai Manda Yai Sava Brahma.
Yai Bhala Yai Manda Yai Sava Brahma.
Yeah.
In the material world, conceptions of good and bad are all mental speculations. Therefore, saying this is good and this is bad is all a mistake.
Yeah. It's like Prabhupada would say, you know, this is wet stool, dry stool. Like that, the pig is distinguishing. Pig likes which one? Dry or wet? He likes wet stool more. So amongst the pigs, there is discussion. I don't like dry, I like wet. But ultimately, stool is stool only. Similarly, don't glorify material achievements. Don't glorify material success. Like for example, somebody says, hey, he studied in IIT. Hey, he went abroad. Hey, he got a job in Microsoft. Hey, do you know, he achieved this, he got this medal, that medal. That's like, oh, he got wet stool. It's like that. Yeah. So he says material achievements are all like wet stool. Somebody didn't achieve materially, he is dry stool, like that. Because in material world, whatever you achieve, everything is burnt at the time of ashes with the body only. Nothing goes with the soul to the next life. Why to extol the glory of something which is perishable commodity, temporary commodity, which has no spiritual element in it? So, and this is one of the things constantly I am also struggling to induce in the youth preaching also. I inevitably see that the boys gravitate towards this. Like for example, the boys get placed, in the final year, and that is glorified so much. If somebody does some spiritual service, nobody talks about it. And when a boy gets, oh, he got in Reliance, Hari Bol. He is going abroad, Hari Bol. That is big things are put. And why is our resident devotees, why they do that? Because the new boys are very impressed with that. Correct, no? So this impressing game is going on in this material world. Materially impressing people. Same with impressing the new people with, you put some blazers and coat and suit and boot and, you know, you give an impressive presentation without giving anything spiritual. That is another example. So in this way, we can be cheating others and cheating ourselves. So therefore, he is saying that in this world, good and bad are both bad. Go ahead.
Third, Srila Prabhupada remarked that it is not our business to try to gain popularity by posing as a welfare institution that feeds poor. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada often remarked that it is not our business to try to gain popularity by posing as a welfare institution, one that, for instance, feeds the poor. This kind of posturing misleads both the public and the members of our own society.
Even members of our society gradually will become foolish. See, sometimes what our devotees think, we will trick the masses by telling them we are feeding the poor. But gradually, that consciousness comes where? Into the organization also. Even our people will start saying that, what is it, simply chanting and dancing, is it enough? We should do something for the suffering people. Like that they start talking. Like one devotee was telling, Prabhu, in this corona time, simply is it enough? Just lecturing and just chanting and dancing. We should do something practical for the society. Oh, really? You know, if you are doing something practical for society, people will eat and pass stool, that's all. They don't carry anything with them to the next life. On the other hand, if they are chanting the holy name, that goes with the soul to the next life. You can't see that. Why don't you have clarity? We don't have clarity because we become fools. We have been simply fooled by social service. That is our problem, you see. See, you can fool the masses and then eventually who will be fooled? We only will be fooled. Therefore, one has to be thoroughly honest. That's what Prabhupada is saying like this. We don't want to be seen as an organization which is doing social service. We stand for giving Krishna consciousness. People should say, now if you see ISKCON worldwide, most of the people, if you say the word ISKCON, what is the first thing they remember now? Two things they remember, Food for Life and Govindas. Do you think our society is mainly doing only this? How unfortunate. Our philosophy is so hefty philosophy, solid philosophy. Do you think any organization has such philosophy like what we have? We have such a golden philosophy, but it has not reached the masses. People are not aware. People are thinking we are a food distribution organization. Why? Because many people have highlighted the food distribution so much that we are cheating the people, we have got cheated also, unfortunately. This is not the priority of our organization. Did Prabhupada go to America only to give food? Was his ultimate goal only that? He gave philosophy. He woke up the people and see the gurus of ISKCON, how intelligent they are. Prabhupada got such very, very intelligent people from West to join the organization by giving morning walks, by giving regular lectures, and writing more than 100 books. Therefore, the book should be promoted more than food. Food others will give. We don't have to worry. We have to give books first. Let people take the books, read the books, become enlightened. And every university, every school, every office, people should have read the Prabhupada books. Nowadays, I feel so happy when I go in the train to give Prabhupada books. Some people say, Swamiji, show all the books. And they say, these 4 books I already have. Now you give me the new ones. Oh, I feel so jolly to see that. That means people are coming to know Prabhupada's books. And that is what is our what do you call it? It's called as, there is something called as a prime gift of any organization. USB, the USB, the USP, the unique selling point of organization. Most vital thing of ISKCON should be what? Prabhupada books. And if they read Prabhupada books, they will recognize Prabhupada. If they don't read Prabhupada books, how will they know who he is? So many people are after so many other bogus leaders, you know, who are not standing for truth. You know, they are being popularized. Prabhupada is not so much known by the people because we have not promoted the books, you see. So therefore he is saying, let us not be, Prabhupada did not want us to be known for just feeding the poor. Actually, Prabhupada definitely wanted us to feed prasadam. If somebody comes to temple, takes darshan, they should not go with empty hand. We should feed prasadam. Therefore, we have Food for Life going on practically all day. We are giving. But when you go to Food for Life, they have a big loud Hare Krishna Kirtan going on there. You cannot get prasad without hearing the holy name. You have to hear the holy name, eat prasad. You have to see the Gopuram also. At least that much sukriti you take and go. Next.
Furthermore, by identifying with charitable acts as the ultimate service to humanity, devotees accumulate obstacles that are as burdensome to their spiritual lives as those created by sinful acts.
See, it's as burdensome as what is created by sinful act. We don't understand it. We don't understand it. Some or other, some of the devotees in the recent past, they have been thinking that we can go to orphanages and feed some food, or we can give them some torn clothes. So the first question I asked, what did you do? Anything Krishna consciousness did for them? Did you give them the holy name? Some of the new upcoming first year boys are asking, hey, you guys are always chanting and having morning program and weekly classes. What are you doing for the poor? Don't you give tuition to the village children? Don't you go to the orphanage and give them some food? So our boys are asking what to do. Then I told them, you should carry some Hare Krishna stickers with you. And you can carry some books with you. And carry Mridangam Kartal. You can give them some prasadam. Along with that, do some kirtan. Give some stickers. Give some Krishna pictures to them. And tell them some Krishna stories to them also. Give some values like that. So that you are giving something spiritual. Otherwise, simply going to orphanage and giving your old clothes and coming. What are you accruing? Pious activities. Which are as dangerous as sinful acts. That's what he is saying here. Sukrutotaya. Go ahead.
ISKCON's only concern should be to distribute pure devotional service. To qualify people for the process of pure devotion, the society distributes Krishna's mercy in the form of sanctified food to rich and poor alike. But that should be the extent and purpose of its charitable acts.
Yes. Like in Kam temple, you will see the food for life we are distributing. Yeah, in front of the temple. Many IIT boys, girls come and take in that small, you know, drone with a spoon. They sit there and eat. You know, millionaires are coming and eating that. This is the purpose of ISKCON. Because millionaires are also poor only. Krishna prema vina avyartha daridra jeevan. Boliye?
Krishna prema
vina avyartha daridra jeevan. Dasa kore vetan more deya prema dhan. One who does not have Krishna prema is a daridra and his jivan is vyartha. You say, if one does not have Krishna prema, he is a poor fellow and his life is a waste. You say, so there are many people wandering in the road. Even the millionaires are also daridra only. Why they are daridra? Because they don't have Krishna prema. So when they come to temple, when you are giving them prasad, in this consciousness we should give the prasad. Please take this, oh millionaire, so-called millionaire, he is a billionaire for outside people, for us he is beggar only, oh beggar. Please take this prasad. When you eat the prasad, you will become true billionaire. Because the prasadam will give you bhakti sukriti. Then you, once you get Krishna prem, then you are becoming rich, truly rich. So real wealth is Krishna consciousness. So with that consciousness one should do, give the holy name in Harinam Sankirtan, distribute the prasadam, and give the preaching programs, everything. So in this way he is saying that this should be ISKCON's only purpose is to distribute pure devotional service. And in this way sanctified food is for whom? For poor people or rich people? For both. Because we see from Krishna's point of view. You know, rich man is not. Prabhupada, while dealing with Ambarish Prabhu, the first thing Prabhupada told Ambarish Prabhu, where is food? He asked. And Ambarish was shaken up, Ambarish Prabhu. Later on Ambarish Prabhu says, after I became Prabhupada's disciple, Prabhupada treated me along with other disciples just like anybody else. He did not give me any separate dignity for my being so such a big millionaire. And that's what really touched my heart. He says that he didn't single me out. Mr. Ford has come, please sit. And then all other disciples and Prabhupada went to other side. No, he never treated like that. He says he treated me as one of the other disciples. And I could understand that Swami is completely detached. He is not attached at all to anything. He simply wants to give Krishna. Like Prabhupada went to Japan. In Japan, he was supposed to give a lecture. So that one Mr. Mahesh, I think, was organizer of the program. So he was telling about, you know, the Hindu and, you know, all those things. So Prabhupada said, what is Hindu? Hindu word is not there in Vedas anywhere. It's all coined by the Afghanist people who called us Sindhu and it became Hindu, you know. So that fellow got a bit offended because they were Hindutvavadis, you know, that kind of thing. And later on Prabhupada was given a seat, he was sitting, he had put an ordinary chair, just like we have this mold chair for Prabhupada to sit. So disciples went and told Maheshji, what is this? He's a international Swamiji, he's a very famous personality, you're putting an ordinary chair like this. You should get an asana like this. And this fellow said, only half an hour is there for the program. He said, no, you have to get it at any cost. They pushed him. And then they got a nice asana like this. Then asana was there. Then they asked him, where is the garland? He said, you guys only get a garland, he told them. So then the devotees said, no, you have to get it. So he told the devotees to spend money and purchase their own garland and bring. They said, no. You have to purchase because you are hosting Swamiji. It's your duties in... For you are, you know, because you are the host, it's ideal for you to purchase. Then he got the garland and brought. So with respect to dealing with Prabhupada respectfully, he was falling short. But then when Prabhupada said about this Hindu thing, he got easily offended. And then Prabhupada was sitting. Then next to that, secondly, they planned to call a Mayavadi. But Prabhupada was not getting up. Prabhupada, he didn't want a Mayavadi to come and give a lecture. He was just sitting. He was closing his eyes, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram 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 Hare. He was not getting up. Then they arranged for another chair for him to sit in. And that fellow came and sat. And almost 40 minutes he spoke, Prabhupada kept his eyes closed and nodding head, he was listening. That much everything was all right. But after that fellow started Mayavad. You know, you are God, I am God, everybody is God. And Prabhupada became extremely angry. And devotee saw that. Hey, Prabhupada angry, they ran to the stage and Prabhupada said, Kirtan, he said. Then everybody started Kirtan. So after the whole thing was over, Kirtan, the program got ended now. Because everybody got up, they thought everything is ending now. So the Maheshi got thoroughly offended, the organizer. And he was supposed to give a place for Prabhupada in Japan, but he didn't give because of this. And Prabhupada said, at least he got a chastisement, he said. Because, you know, we don't want any mumbo jumbo, we don't want any hodgepodge. We cannot cooperate with the hodgepodge just for the sake of, you know, getting a place. You do the right thing, Krishna will give you a place. Prabhupada was confident. So you will see that Prabhupada actually was a person propagating pure devotional service, standing for the truth. He was uncompromising. So, therefore, Prabhupada would say that whether you are rich or poor, all of us are poor. Spiritually, we are poor. We all need prasad. Prasad means what? Mercy. We need mercy. Everybody requires mercy. Is there anybody on the road who doesn't need mercy? So, rich or poor, everybody should be given prasad as mercy. Yeah, next.
Fourth, Bhakti Devi's lenient mercy and stern hand. The ease by which obstacles created by mistakes in the performance of devotee service are eradicated comes from the mercy of Bhakti Devi, the goddess of devotion. Bhakti Devi ensures that these unwanted habits are short-lived and easily nullified because she considers sincere the students who try to better themselves. If, however, devotees abuse her mercy by purposeful carelessness, if they think, because Bhakti Devi is always lenient, it doesn't matter whether we commit offenses, then their insincerity is exposed and they lose Bhakti Devi's mercy. In this case, she applies a stern hand to help the devotees nullify offenses and to free them from unwanted habits that accrued.
His Holiness Jayadul Swami Maharaj was telling, this Bhakti Devi is different from Vrinda Devi. And she is also, Bhakti Devi is also assistant to Radharani. And he was telling that she is the one who overlooks our promotion in the stages, higher stages. Just like in a company, you get promotion or demotion or we are asked to quit the company, correct, no? So that is done by somebody, some boss above. Similarly, she is the one who is watching the, observing the progress of sadhaka and awarding results. So here he says that she actually is very lenient with those who are very sincere. See, if somebody is sincere, leniency can be applied on them because they will not do mistake. If they do, they will be very sorry. They will be very repentant. And therefore that attitude is liked by Bhakti Devi. But if somebody is deliberately committing mistakes, then they lose the sincerity part. Then she takes very stern hand, he says. Then the path becomes a little difficult. Just like for example, a mother also will have to treat a child a little strongly. If the child is playing all day, and mother allows the child to play for an hour, but he plays all day. Then the mother has to, give some treatment, a pinch or a slap, and make him sit and make him study. Example is given here. For example,
if a pujari worships the deity while in an unclean state due to circumstances beyond his or her control, the mistake is forgiven when the devotee expresses true repentance and recites a chapter of Bhagavad Gita. But if that same devotee repeatedly neglects the standards of cleanliness, thinking, I will chant a chapter of the Gita after worship and be freed of my mistake, his or her mentality is no longer innocent but devious. This devious mentality offends the goddess of devotion. Purposeful mistakes in service are actually offenses against the holy name.
Yeah, purposeful mistakes. You understand, no? Like a pujari is forgiven if he reads one chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes if he is a little bit, like sometimes a pujari is supposed to wash his, chadar. So he used before. Now he forgot to wash. So now he thinks that, I didn't go with this chadar to bathroom or anywhere. It is in my room only. And I have no other chadar available. It's a rainy day. So let me take the old chadar, use the chadar again. So it's a little unclean. It's not proper. We are supposed to wear a fresh chadar. But if he reads one chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that is nullify. But if one makes it a regular practice, every day one chapter I'll read Bhagavad Gita. And every day one day, used dhoti, one day used kurta. You understand? No? If he regularly does it, then Bhakti Devi becomes upset, he's saying. Correct, no? That offends the goddess of devotion. Yeah.
Six, the most difficult unwanted habits to eradicate arise from offenses to the holy name. Of all unwanted habits, those arising from offenses to the holy name are the most protracted and difficult to eradicate. This is due to the virulent nature of these offenses. Unsteady devotion is important to eradicate most of the anarthas that spring from nama aparadha. Steady devotion removes more, but not all of these anarthas, and ecstasy, bhava, nullifies all but a few.
Oh, this is a deep sentence. See, unsteady devotion means Anishtita Bhajana Kriya is important, he says, to eradicate most of the anarthas that spring from Namapara. That means, you know, Sukrutota, Dushkrutota, and all those things may be gradually removed till Nishta, and then up to Asakti, they are completely finished. You know, Ekadesha Vartani, Bahudesha Vartani, Prayiki, Atyantiki, Purna. So all these five stages of nullification gradually proceed, and Asakti stage, everything is finished. Whereas, Anishtita Bhajana Kriya cannot touch Namaparad at all. Namaparad remain very powerful. Huh? They cannot be nullified by Anishtita Bhajana Kriya. They keep on going with us. And the effects of Namaparad comes in various forms as we suffer also. He will explain that. The effects of Namaparad comes as dryness while chanting, offensive mentality towards devotees, and offensive mentality towards scriptures and things like that. These are all ill effects of the Namaparad. We cannot escape that easily, he is saying. So, but steady devotion means after Nishta, removes more, but not all of these anarthas. And ecstasy nullifies all but a few, he is saying. Some more remain. At Bhava, read it.
Only those hindrances caused by offending great Vaishnavas remain.
That means, you know, even in the 10 offenses, which is the offense offending Vaishnavas? First one, yeah. That remains. 1 and 3. Guru is also Vaishnava, yeah. So, 1 and 3 remain. All others are nullified, he is saying. Yeah, yes.
Astonishingly, even after love destroys all unwanted habits from offenses, devotees are still not free from the danger of those anarthas that tend to recur. They attain absolute freedom from anarthas and ultimate shelter, vastu siddhi, only when they return to the spiritual world.
Sometimes they can repeat. The old anarthas may revisit again. Like if there is offensive mentality, everybody has experience. Say you became angry with somebody, the anger comes in waves. You became angry. And then after 1 week, 2 weeks, some other instance comes. For the another instance, but the person is same. The two people again encounter. The old anger gets connected now. And then again, and the other person will understand. I think Prabhu is remembering the old anger. So it comes in waves. Boom, boom, boom. So the offenses repeat, he is saying. Until we return to spiritual world. Can offenses be committed after attaining Lord shelter in the spiritual world?
Devotees may argue that Maharaj Chitraketu and the brothers Jay and Vijay committed offenses to great Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva and the Kumaras, respectively.
You know that, no? Chitraketu laughed at Shiva keeping Parvati on his lap, you know, and giving a class on Vairagya to the Siddhas and all. But in that assembly was sitting Narada, Vyasa, and such people were sitting. Still, Chitraketu laughed. Actually, Chitraketu's intention was, you know, Shiva is exalted, but the other people will misunderstand him and imitate him, which will cause havoc in the world. So he wanted to correct Shiva, but Parvati misunderstood him and gave him a curse to become Vritrasura. So that is one instance. Another one is Jaya Vijay stopping 4 Kumaras to enter spiritual world and getting a curse. They said, you are Bhagavat Pratikulya Shilav. You have gone against the behavior of Lord Vishnu. Your Swami Vishnu is always humble towards Brahmanas. How is it that you people adopted the opposite approach? Your eyes are bloodshot, nose is fat and stout, and we can easily see your angry face, angry glance at us. So you don't befit the spiritual world. You should go to that Bhuloka where the living entities are afflicted by Rajaguna and Tamaguna, and you spend a while there, get purified, and then you can come back. Like that they gave a curse to Jaya Vijay. Yes.
Not only is it impossible to nullify offenses at any stage, it appears that even the Lord's associates are not free from the flaw of committing offenses and tasting their bitter fruits.
It appears, he says. It's not that he says. Actually, from these two examples, what it appears? Hey, even in Vaikuntha, somebody can commit offenses. Jaya Vijay committed. And some devotees try to give explanation. You see, they were not inside Vaikuntha. They were just outside the door of Vaikuntha. Some people try to give explanation like that. You know, that is not a correct explanation. If somebody tells you, you have to catch them. That's not the correct explanation. Correct explanation is given in the next para. Read it.
On closer examination, however, we can see that these examples do not substantiate the arguments raised. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur clarifies that Maharaj Chitraketu's maha aparadh to Lord Shiva was apparent, not factual. As evidence,
apparent means it appears like aparadh, but actually it is not aparadh. Why? How do we know that? Because Lord Shiva looked at Chitraketu and he smiled. Antushnim. And then after that he became silent. And then the Siddhas also saw Lord Shiva smiling and becoming silent. So they also followed suit. They also did not protest. They understood that this is not like Daksha Prajapati offending Shiva. Because Chitraketu profusely praised Shiva also. Jatadaro, Tivratapo, Muninam Gurum, Loka Gurum, many things he said. He is the guru of all the people, he is the guru of all the Siddhas and Munis, he is Jatadaro, he has Jata, which means he has no material enjoying propensity, materially. Tivratapo, he is a very severe performer of penances, Muninam Gurum. So in this way, words and all he used, he profusely praised Shiva first, and then he told that, Aste Sabhayam, he said, sitting in the Sabha, Anki Kritya, means now, keeping hand around his wife, keeping her on the lap. Now, what will the world think about it? Like that he said. So, therefore, Shiva did not take offense and the Siddhas didn't take offense. Only 1% took offense. Who is that? Parvati. Yeah. So, therefore, here Chakravartirakura has clarified that it was apparent fault. It was not actually factual. Still, Prabhupada writes in the purport, we all should be very careful. Sometimes our intention may be good, but the effect may be bad. People may misunderstand us. So Chitraketu's behavior was considered as audacity by Parvati. She said, see, there is Brahma, there is Shiva, there is Brahma, there is Narada, and such great personalities are sitting here in the assembly and they are listening. Do you think they will not correct my husband in case my husband is doing wrong? And you have become a self-appointed advisor. And you are not only, you appear like a person who is sent here to give danda to Shiva and me, to all of us. Actually, why the issue became too much? Because the matter involves wife also. That's the problem. You understand, no? Correct or not? Because he told you are keeping who in the lap? That includes her also. You see? Actually, if Parvati Mata was inside the house, he offended only Shiva for something else. I don't know how seriously he should have taken. Because now it is becoming like a public, insult. Because she is sitting on his lap and that is being criticized. And also, she saw Narada sitting, Vedavyasa sitting, such big people are sitting. They are not saying anything. Who is this fellow to say? She took offense. Later on, Shiva corrected her, told her that, you see, Devi, you are very beautiful, but Chitraketu is more beautiful than you. So Vaishnavas are more beautiful than even beautiful women, he said. Because that is the time he said, Narayana para sarvena kutaschana bibhyati. That was he said. Swarga pavarga narakeshu apitulyartha darshanaha. So, therefore one has to be very careful. So he is saying it is apparent, not factual. Okay. As evidence,
he explains that if this were not true, how could love for the Lord be visible in the demonic body Chitraketu was cursed to accept in his next life, the body of Vritrasura? Had his offense been factual, Prema surely would have withdrawn from his heart.
See, offense dries up Prema. This is the formula. If somebody has offended, now there are two types of offenses we are going to see in the next slide. We will see. If one type of offense if you do, it dries up the prema and we become very dry in spiritual life and one gradually turns to material life. Another type of offense, if one commits, one gets materially punishment like Vritrasura got. But the prema remains intact. Like Bharat Maharaj got a punishment of becoming a deer, but his prema for the Lord remained intact. So, what is this? How is it in one offense you lose the taste for the Lord? In another offense, the taste for the Lord remains. So, what are these two types of offenses? Let's go to the next one. Yeah.
It is impossible for Lord's associates to be offenders. The case of Jay and Vijay is similar. The two Vaikuntha gatekeepers were aware that the Lord wanted to enjoy the pleasure of fighting. And because they were the strongest among Lord Narayan's associates, they considered themselves most fit to fulfill his desire. But their fighting spirit could not be fully aroused unless they became inimical to the Lord. Stimulated by prema, they offended the Kumaras and later came to the material world as a result of loving service and not because of an indiscretion.
This is a sentence I love the most. Stimulated by prema, they offended the Kumaras. So how the prema can make you offend someone? Because it was Lord's will that they offend the Kumaras and earn a curse and go to Bhuloka and prepare themselves and be ready to receive Lord Varaha or Lord Narasimha in fight. So therefore he says stimulated by prema. So the pure devotees are stimulated by prema, whether they act apparently offensively or they act in merciful ways. Whatever way they may act, they are stimulated by prema. That's the point. Yeah. Therefore, Lord himself told them, it was my will that you should go to Bhuloka. Go ahead.
There are many examples in which the Lord's associates apparently commit offenses. Yet every act the Lord's personal associates perform is under the protection of his internal potency.
Yeah, under the protection of internal potency. Like Parikshit putting a dead snake around the neck of Samikrishi, isn't it? Or Arjuna being an illusion, refusing to fight the battle, isn't it? Or you find Chitraketu becoming a Vritrasura and speaking verses on pure devotional service. So these are all appearing to be offensive, but actually they are done under the protection of Antaranga Shakti. Yes.
It is therefore impossible for them to be offenders. Such apparent transgressions are merely facets of the Lord's pastimes. In conclusion, the Lord's associates are free from both the results of past offenses and the tendency to commit new offenses.
Oh, powerful. So they are also free from the effects of past offenses because they have attained what stage? Prema. Beyond prema, there is no more effect of past offenses. In prema stage, you can't have enemies. You will not consider any Vaishnava to be enemy. Ajata Shatru. In fact, even if someone is an enemy, you will always think of his welfare. One always thinks like that. Swastyastru Vishwasya Kalaprasidatam. Prahlad is saying, may there be auspiciousness for all living entities, including the envious ones. Let the envious ones give up the envy. Either he is praying like that. You know, I heard a pastime from South India. Who was that Vaishnava who went to pray to Ranganath and every day used to go and declare, I am very fallen, I am this, I am that. So he used to, Parashara Bhatta? Yeah, Parashara Bhatta. At that time, one day, one envious person had come. He was also taking darshan. When Parashara Bhatta was saying, oh my dear Lord, I am very, very fallen soul. And he was telling Satyam, Satyam. And then one more thing he would say Satyam, Satyam. So Parashara Bhatta was very happily smiling and telling the Lord, my Lord, every day I came and told you, you did not take my word seriously. But today I have got evidence with me to prove to you that I am very fallen. That was his consciousness. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, if a person who is a chronic criticizer of me, offender of me, I would like to keep him as my neighbor to my home. And I will be extremely thankful to him. And in case he goes away to another place or dies, I would consider it a great misfortune. Like that he says. Why? Because such people are required to purify us. Otherwise in our life, we always think, I am wonderful. Yeah, go ahead.
This is done.
Yeah.
9. Chilling reminder and serious implication of aparadhas. Devotees should carefully understand the causes and implications of aparadhas. This topic is worth discussing among serious Vaishnavas, who can thus learn to avoid offenses and the crippling effects they have on the growth of their devotional creeper.
Yeah, offenses have a crippling effect. Actually, this is what is most important. Like imagine, right now we have hands very comfortably moving, we have legs, we have eyes to see. Is there anybody who would like to see one of your eyes becoming blind or one hand broken? Or one leg broken. It's not a comfortable life after that. If one leg is broken, to climb up and come will be difficult. Or one eye is not there, you won't be very comfortable. So when we are physically crippled, we don't even want to dream about it. We want to make sure that my whole body will be healthy, isn't it? But the way aparadhas cripple us is even more severe. Because when you are physically crippled, in the next life you may get another body where there is no crippling physically. Whereas when aparadhas cripple us birth after birth, they go, the effects of aparadhas goes through many hundreds of lifetimes. Yes.
Chaitanya Charitamrita gives a chilling reminder of the serious implications of offenses committed on the royal road of pure devotion.
Bahu janma kare yadi shravana kirtana tabutana paya krishna pade premadana. One of the most frightening verses in CC. Read the translation.
If one is infested with the 10 offenses in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, despite his endeavor to chant the holy name for many births, he will not get the love of Godhead. That is the ultimate goal of this chanting.
That means he says, if one is committing the 10 offenses regularly, then the chanting doesn't produce the desired result of prema. Yeah.
10. Stern warning to all those who wish to go back to Godhead. The phrase, many births, bahu janma, should send a stern warning to all those who wish to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Be forewarned. Be extremely careful. The eradication of unwanted habits from the first three causes, reactions from pious acts, from sinful acts, and from mistakes committed while performing worship.
That is seva apradha. Yeah. That is sukritota, dushkritota and seva aparad. Yes.
May take place automatically as one practices devotional service, but eradication of bad habits arising from the fourth cause, offenses to the holy name, are neither easily nor automatically cleared. Once they have taken root, the results of nama aparad are difficult to weed out.
Just like your bhaktilata creeper has taken root, so the weeds also take root. So, once it gets stronger, the roots get stronger, then difficult to weed out, he is saying.
What makes an offense vile and subject to possibly severe punishment lies not so much in the offensive act as in the mentality that bred it.
Here is where we are going to learn one new thing here. There are two types of offenses. One is intentional and one is innocent. So if our offense is innocent, then we are more easily forgiven. But if the offense is intentional, it's very serious. Go ahead.
Generally, offenders knowingly perform their wrong acts.
They perform wrong acts due to envy. Like Amogha, for example. Or like Gopal Chapal. So they are performed intentionally. Yeah. On the other hand, Devananda Pandit's offense was not intentional because he was giving a talk, but his disciples picked up Srivast Thakur and put him out of the pandal. But because he was their master, so Lord Nimai Pandit became angry with him. So because it was unintentional, so it got cleared also very easily when he served Vakreshwar Pandit. Yeah.
In the courts of humans, demigods and the Lord, sins committed knowingly are more serious than those committed unwittingly. An accidental offense means one breaks a rule of devotion or goes against the letter of the law. Devotees may break a rule out of ignorance, by innocent oversight, or because they are strongly influenced by the material energy. But the deviant mentality that underlies conscious disobedience transgresses the spirit of the law and reveals the devotee's duplicity, selfishness or rebellious spirit.
Honest are most important words. We can tell one pastime for each of this. The devotee is duplicity, devotee is selfishness, devotee is rebellious spirit. Those who committed offenses due to these things, these are actually the anarthas which make the behavior of the devotee intentional offenses. For example, the duplicity, like you see Salamalo, for example, he wants to, offend whom? Tukaram. Correct, no? He is adopting duplicity. How? He is taking Tukaram's song and changing the last line. Instead of Tukamane, he is putting Salamalamane. Correct, no? That is duplicity. It's a deliberate offense. It is not an innocent offense. Then there was another fellow who was a Brahmana's leader. What is his name? Ramachandra?
Huh?
Rameshwar Shastri. And his is also very great selfishness, because he is a Brahmana. He wants the Brahmana Kulam to be respectable. So he is arranging to put all the books in Indrayani. Such a great selfishness. just because we Brahmanas have to be prominent, and Tukaram has to be finished, his name, fame should be finished. He is making such a great offense to a pure devotee, due to selfishness. Yeah. And the rebellious spirit, who showed rebellious spirit to a devotee due to which they committed offenses? In committing offense. Our Ramachandrapuri repeatedly being told by his guru, Madhavendrapuri, he offended the guru at the time of death. The guru was about to leave the body. He was singing that song, Hey Mataranath, Kadavalokese. That verse he was singing. Hey Mataranath, where are you? I am going to leave my body now. Without seeing you, I should not leave. And then Ramachandrapuri arrived there in front of him and offended the guru by saying, You will not get Krishna now. He will not come here. Don't waste your time. Better you focus on Brahma Jyoti and relax or something like that, he said. Guru got so wild. Are Brahma Jyoti is the place where Vaishnava never wants to go. He is ready to go to hell also and render service, but not in Brahma Jyoti. And he is telling him, reminding him of Brahma Jyoti at the time of death. A great offense to Guru. So at the time Guru said, get lost from here. Don't stand in front of me. So he got such a very strong curse. Enraged Guru and lost all the blessings because of that. So that's a rebellious spirit. Jaan bujh kar paap karna. Go ahead.
Honest mistakes are more easily corrected than acts performed with a deviant mentality.
Yeah. What are called honest mistakes? Due to oversight. Or like slip of memory. Some Vaishnava told you something and you forgot it. And the Vaishnava is extremely angry with you. And then later on you say, you fall at his feet and say, Prabhu, I am such a foolish person. I tend to forget always. See, I have my notebook and pen. I didn't note down. Therefore, I forgot. I am sorry. So, if somebody says like that, then immediately the Vaishnava also feels sympathy for him. Okay, tell her, forget it. No problem. Don't do it again. Next time I tell you, you note down. You may say, correct, no? These are honest mistakes, we call it. It is due to slip of memory or oversight. It's not deliberate. Go ahead.
To correct his devotees' delinquency and to make them pure-hearted, Krishna provides suitable discipline. Sometimes this discipline is severe and may increase in severity according to the degree of the remaining defiance.
Yeah. So it depends on the seriousness of the offense. Like for example, our Kala Krishna Das was going with Mahaprabhu. So he left Mahaprabhu and went to the Pataharis. It was due to his weakness of heart. You know, because he is getting an opportunity to indulge with some women of the that Pataharis race. They are taking him and they will give him abundant wealth and things like that. He got carried away by that. But Mahaprabhu rejected him. But then since he was servant of Nityananda, he gave him back to Nityananda. He brought him back. Otherwise he would have rejected in south only and come. He brought back and gave him. So now that type of Mahaprabhu condemns that weakness and says that you should not give me a servant who is so weak. You know, he is supposed to take care of me and he is running after a woman. How horrible it is. So sometimes a person who is weak-minded or weak-hearted, uncontrollably the instincts drive him like the animals are driven by instinct. But because he didn't have any offensive mentality towards any devotee or towards Mahaprabhu. Therefore, he again got a service opportunity. Correct, no? The Vaishnava sent him to Bengal to give news about Mahaprabhu. He did some services there and he somehow remained in the fold of devotees without getting lost. You see that. So, here comes a very important point. Sometimes due to our slip, if somebody is suffering, there is some offense also due to that. But that offense is here he says that it's unintentionally committed offense is forgiven, but deliberately, if somebody is developing envy for a Vaishnava and he wants to pull his leg, he wants to assassinate his good reputation, he wants to put him in trouble, so these kind of things, if one does, the holy name becomes extremely angry with such people. Like all these people, Ramachandra Khan, Ramachandra Puri, or Gopal Chakravarti, Gopal Chapal, all these people, you will see that. Yeah.
Attitude of offender versus seriousness of the offensive act. In summary, the
severe. I think this is the last one, I think. Huh? Yeah. Okay.
In summary, the severity of the reaction to offenses depends even more on the attitude with which devotees offend than it does on the seriousness of the acts themselves. Bhrigumani offended Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu with increasingly grave acts, but his motive was relatively innocent. He was simply making an experiment to determine which of the three deities was supreme.
Yeah.
Had his motive been envy or malice, his transgression would have been viewed in a much more serious light.
Yeah.
Scriptures repeatedly praises the power of devotional service to at once eradicate all kinds of sins, including offenses. Why then do the wise say that the effects of offenses are difficult to nullify? The answer lies in how the holy name responds to those who commit offenses to devotional service and to the Vaishnavas. Without doubt, the holy name and pure devotion have inestimable power to purify the greatest offenders.
Yeah. So we have to always check our motive in the offenses that we commit. Yeah? You know, am I cunning? Am I diplomatic? For example, so you get some doubts about a devotee and you talk it to 24 devotees, but you don't ask the devotee anything. You never asked him. Without knowing the full truth, you are just talking to 12 devotees here and there. Then it becomes offensive. Because you never, and also then your intention will be questioned. Why you did that? What you did? Why you didn't ask the person? Why are you just talking to other people? And this is one commonest mistake that people do. Because they have no guts to go and ask the person on the face. On the other hand, they have no strength in spiritual life to not gossip. Then they go around gossiping to people. And this is how, and where does the offensive mentality come from? From mundane association, materialistic association. If somebody is reading newspaper, somebody is seeing world news, now there is China war going on, India-China war. Many devotees are curious to know what is happening in India-China borders. There are thousands of corona videos available on the net. If anybody is becoming interested in this mundane news and mundane activities of the world, that's where the Asat Sangha begins. And then Mahaprabhu says that Asat Sangha causes that type of mentality of comparing things and all, which comes into the Vaishnava Sangha and makes a person commit offenses. This is a secret. Mahaprabhu, he says, Stri Sangi Eka Asadhu Krishna Abhaktar. In that verse he says, Asat Sangha Tyagi Vaishnava Achar. Actually, our Vaishnava Siddhanta is so pure, it is so sublime. Simply reading Gita, Bhagavatam, see, you won't even know the spelling of the word offense. You will not be able to commit only. If you are, therefore you find Bengali Vaishnavas and Puri Vaishnavas are so innocent, they get jubilant and ecstatic for everything because they don't have anything to do with the outside world. They are completely with Krishna. So, but if we are going to associate with mundane sound vibration, then lot of cunningness comes. Diplomacy, cunningness, cheating mentality, rebellious mentality, like he said. Three things he said. Here, where is that? Duplicity, selfishness and rebellious spirit. All these things come leading to that terrible sin, terrible offense, which cannot be cleared even up to the stage of prema. And it is very difficult to clear. So, in case any of us have committed cunning acts or diplomatic acts, we should go in front of the Lord and beg and pray to Him that, my Lord, somehow or other, I am duplicitous, I have a cheating tendency, you know, I purposefully wanted, like one fellow had told many years ago that my books are all deviant books, the Discover Yourself and all these books. And he had told 3-4 people who are coming to temple not to read those books and not associate with me or something like that. Of course, being in a president's role, I have a frank relation. I'll directly go and confront people. I call this devotee to my room and asked, hey, did you say like this? You know, who told you? He asked. Who told is not the point, but did you say that or not? He said, yes, I said. He said, why did you say that? Check my books. I'm just copying from Prabhupada, cut and paste. You know, I'm not writing anything on my own. You know, he said, actually, I saw that they are coming to meet you I was afraid that they will go out of my group. So I wanted to keep them in my group. Therefore I said like that, he said. And I said, think about it. Will Lord be happy? Kunjabari will be very angry on you. I told them, because you are telling lies to them to keep them with you. And you want to break their faith in me. Therefore you are telling lies. Then I asked him, is it diplomatic behavior or innocent behavior? So he said, I will think and tell you tomorrow. I said, where is the need for thinking? It is straightforward diplomatic behavior. Then he was telling, I am very sorry, Prabhu. Yeah, this is an example I am saying. I said, don't do this. And I said, do you think I will take them away from you? I will never do that. In fact, I am very strict about people not interfering with others' preaching. So these are examples I am telling you how our mind can become very cunning like a sly fox and diplomatic. Or one can become rebellious like Ramachandra Puri. These are all the things which cause the grave offenses. One shouldn't do. Some innocent offenses may happen through us and we have to keep on clearing them. And they are more easy to clear. Because you can seek forgiveness. And therefore we all have to look at our attitude. What type of, am I demoniac or am I divine with some amount of wrong tendencies which can be cleared. If you are going to act in very demoniac ways, then diplomatic cunning ways, it's very difficult to progress in devotional life, and devotee life is not suitable for such people. Devotee life requires that if you're committing offenses, actually next class when I give, you will be shocked. People who continuously commit offenses, what happens to them? That is coming in the next lecture. What shape they take eventually. So that is the third session. We will do it next Sunday. Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Any of your questions, you can write to me. I will answer them as a part of the next class. You can write mail to me. Thank you.